And it is 9 a.m. in the West Coast. It is 12 noon in the East Coast, and it's 7 p.m. in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Today is January 20th, 2016, and this is Orly Benny Davis with the Impossible Truth. Today on CBS Radio Studio One, we are going to listen to what's the latest news from the presidential race, and we're going to listen to some update of what's going on. And then we're going to, you know, talk about what life is about and wishing a happy birthday to some special person that, you know, are celebrating the birthday this week. But let's start with something that we left on Monday. On Monday, I promised you to listen to Elon Musk, how they pronounce his name, I don't know, but is one of those new heroes in the of the future, people that see ahead. A young man that devoted his life to humanity, and as we all know, we always get our superstars. So let's listen to Elon Musk.
You people have called you the real Tony Stark. Okay, you've got your finger in so many different advanced technologies. As I said, SpaceX, Tesla, now you've got Solar City and the solar pack that people put in their houses. Are you sincerely trying to save the world?
I'm trying to do good things, yeah. I mean, saving the world is not.
But you're trying to do good things and you're a billionaire. I mean,
yeah.
That seems a little bit like either superhero or supervillain. You have to choose one.
I'm trying to do useful things. I mean,
Yeah. So let's talk about the Tesla. I have a Tesla.
Yeah.
Okay, and I love it. I love it. You've got a new thing that you think people are going to want for their Tesla. Can we show the footage of this? I think it's called, this thing is the power arm. Yeah. That is an extremely...
It's a snake bot charger.
It's a snake charger that automatically plugs into your car when you get home.
This looks a little wrong.
That really looks like the thing that jacks into the back of Neo's head in The Matrix.
Right.
All right? Is that thing going to attack me in my sleep?
I wouldn't... For the prototype, at least, I would recommend not dropping anything when you're near it.
Okay. All right. Now, another thing that you are talking about is you sincerely think that we should go to Mars, like... that men and women should go to Mars.
Yeah.
Why do we want to go to Mars? It's uninhabitable.
It's very inhospitable. That's true.
It is. Like, you have to be in, like, domes and everything, and you're just breathing.
Initially domes. Yes.
Really? How long before we could turn Mars into some place where we could live?
It is a fixer-upper of a planet. At first, you're going to have to live in transparent domes, but eventually...
Yes, we're going to be huffing each other's stank.
Yeah, but eventually you can transform Mars into an Earth-like planet.
How would you do that?
You'd warm it up. Just warm it up.
How would you warm Mars up? You know, it's a long way away from the sun.
There's the fast way and the slow way.
Okay. Give me the fast way.
The fast way is drop thermonuclear weapons over the poles.
You're a supervillain. That's what a supervillain does.
Yeah.
All right. That's about Elon Musk. This is a guy that's specialty is engineering, and he's been working on some idea to ship some people to Mars. Obviously, he's working very hard, and with the Tesla cars, he's innovated, you know, all some kind of features for the future. People, you know, sometimes we want to control everything, but since I know youth and since I know that the rebellious in you there is so beautiful, I want to let them be. I want to let them be and make them choose the future. That's why I really understand what they're doing with Bernie Sanders these days. because if we move now to the presidential race issue, we know that in New Hampshire, Bernie Sanders is leading 60% over Hillary Clinton, that dropped to 30, which makes him a really strong contender right now. They say that in the end of the game, maybe, you know, she can win, but right now she's losing, and she follow up, and we didn't even start talking about issues that she really created in the past practice of politics. She remembered she was involved in the Middle East uproar. She was involved, of course, in Benghazi, in Libya. She was involved in making the creation of many situations that at the time of need, she dropped the ball. You know, I don't mind people coming and thinking to fix something, but you are not allowed to drop the ball on the universe, on the world, on your people, on your family, on your spouse, on your loved one, on your friends, on your neighbor. You are responsible to your life, and when you influence and when you have a title that brings a lot of responsibility, you better step up to the plate. Because I don't know, but in my book, the questioning of Benghazi needs to be clear. When we know that she was there and she was supposed to let people save him, and she owed the forces, which is unbelievable, makes you think. So let's even think about, let's give her the credit that it wasn't her role to send them, okay. But she was supposed to protect them where they needed. And if not, she was supposed to stop everything to protect her people. And that wasn't American. That wasn't the way people behave in America. And that's something that I think she's lacking. So for all that matter, I think that even that I would love to have a woman in office, I really do. I feel that in this mess, we need many women to clean up the mess. Well, it will be nice. It will be really nice to have more women. But right now, America didn't bring us forward people that I can, women that I can recommend. And she lost the game in Benghazi. She lost it, you know, the game in so many ways, also revealing that she was trying to create some revolution in the middle of Israel, which, you know, it's making, you know, people, it's creating victims. If you create victims, you have a lot of victims on your, you know, on your record. Not a good one for America. We need the redemption. We need redemption overall. And right now in Wall Street, when they're falling 300 points, we need some blessing and prayer to stop it. Because if the market crashed today, if the market, Wall Street, crashes today, lower, we're going to wake up to a new day tomorrow, which everything going to break loose. And you don't want it. You really do not want it. You have to take a deep breath, hold your horses, and hold on to your stock. Yes, you might go down like everybody else, but at least you had the courage to stand up for what is, for your record. Yes, of course, money speaks. I cannot talk to somebody. It's their responsibility to respect. But when you gamble like you do in Wall Street, no wonder you have a Sanders that comes and tries to blow everything up. And but however, if you're really a good gambler, you wouldn't sell this today because you might create the crash of tomorrow, which will cost you much more money. So that's it. Now it's Wednesday. We have to celebrate it with Italian music as we speak. So let's listen to some Italian music.
Così sono partito per un lungo viaggio, lontano dagli errori e dagli sbagli che ho commesso. Ho visitato luoghi per non doverti rivedere, e più mi allontanavo e più sentivo di star bene. E nevicava molto, però io camminavo. A volte ho acceso un fuoco per il freddo e ti pensavo, sognando ad occhi aperti sul ponte di un traghetto. Credevo di vedere.
Right, all right. Now we want to say goodbye to one of the greatest people, you know, in the Italian cinema. Ettore Scola. Ettore Scola had a really incredible career, and he won the global the Golden Globe for Best Foreign Film in 1978. His film A Special Day was nominated for 5 Academy Awards. Now, Sophia Loren was a part of his movie, so I think it will be a nice oldies to watch, to see what he did, and God bless his soul, may be with Angel always. You know, he died in Rome. Not easy, not easy. And talking about the Oscars, I want to tell you that I saw the Bridge of Spies with Tom Hanks. Incredible movie, incredible delivery. I love the movie. I think that it deserves an Oscar. I don't know in what category. I don't want to go against anybody because I love them so much. But a recognition must be made to this incredible actor and also to the movie, because the story is a true story. And what Tom Hanks does, he takes a real story and bring it to life so vividly that it stays with you. You know, you feel it, you understand it, and also you become a better, I think, actor as an older actor, because his spirit come across, his humor, his ironic being is really emphasized here, even though that it's a drama. It's something that it's taken from the spy book. Amazing. So I recommend you all go and see it and put it on your libraries as one that you have to keep, because those are keepers, all right? So we have our little Italian music. We had we talked about Elon Musk, which needs to inspire other people. And in one interview that Elon Musk talked to, he was really emotional about the feeling that some astronaut didn't really recommend his adventures or thinking about the future in Mars. So it really, really got to me, the fact that we need people to inspire the youth. We need to go forward as people, as humanity. And once we do that, we have to recommend, and with this incredible crisis in the world, to have somebody get inspired, you mean that you got it, you know, touched by God to do that. So I trust in him. I think that it'll be amazing. And it's amazing also to understand what Bernie Sanders is up to, because I know he's a left winger. He's a completely left winger. And I'm completely on the opposite side of most, but I know that the youth love him. And since it's the future in their hands, they better have leaders that inspire them. That's what I'm saying. So let's talk about the election again. And can Donald Trump win the Republican nomination now? They have something, a segment of that sort. We are going to listen to Donald Trump, that his chances to win the Republican will be great if we can listen to that. Thank you.
Campaign 2016 segment tonight. No meaningful polling to tell you about yet this year. A new poll from NBC and SurveyMonkey is not scientific, although it has Donald Trump leading big. Last night, after he spoke to us on The Factor, Trump headed out to the very liberal state of Massachusetts.
Security at the event also extremely tight. This was the line of people waiting to get in. The line so long that it snaked more than a block away.
He's straight up front, no BS.
I think the country's going the wrong direction. I think we're sliding down, and we need a change.
Joining us now from Austin, Texas, Karl Rove. So, last night we talked about both political parties in trouble in the sense that they're losing credibility with their own voters, with their own people. And that's why Trump has risen. Question tonight is, can Trump actually win the Republican nomination, in your opinion?
Yeah, sure he can. But will he is going to be a big question, because while he leads nationally with 35% of the vote and is second in Iowa with about 27.4 and leads in New Hampshire with 26.3, the question is how much of the rest of that, you know, 60, 65, 70% of the electorate is going to be available to him inside the Republican Party. He's got a high floor, but he may have a low ceiling.
I gotcha. The people who like him already have stated it, and that's why he's so far ahead, and that he might not be able to convert others over because he's gotten so much airtime. And he's so much exposure. Everybody knows who he is, unlike Marco Rubio or John Kasich. I mean, they know Trump. They know what he's saying. They're following it. And he might not be able to rally any more than that. I understand that. But with what he has now, which is about a third of the Republican voting in the primary, is that enough to get him the nomination in Cleveland?
Well, it depends on two things, I think. One is how cut up these early primaries and caucuses are. Between February 1st and the 14th of March, there's only one winner-take-all. South Carolina, the early four states were allowed to decide winner-take-all or proportional, but all the rest of them have to be proportional up to the 14th of March. So the first question is, how cut up is that early phase? Because the rules are such that in some instances, if you get 5% of the vote in Massachusetts, for example, you get a delegate, and others the threshold
That's very
is 15
interesting
or 20.
Point. So if it's balkanized all over the place, with Trump winning in New Hampshire, which I think he will, and I think that Cruz will probably win in Iowa, I think you concur on that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. But if it's balkanized and everybody takes away some, then they're going to arrive in Cleveland with no over-the-top winner, and certainly the party elders do not want Donald Trump.
Two things. One is, I do think that we're going to have a winnowing process very rapidly after New Hampshire, and there are only going to be three or four or maybe at most five candidates left in it in early March, and probably less by the middle of March. Now, the second big question is, are we down to two or three candidates, Trump, somebody else, and somebody else at most, by the time we get to the winner-take-all states starting on the 15th of March, the Ides of March? Bad for Caesar could also be bad for somebody else. Because
You have to consider that Trump will be in it, Rubio will be in it, Cruz will be in it, Bush will be in it, and maybe Christie. I think those are the five. With all due respect to the other candidates, I could be wrong on it.
If there are five candidates in that, then Trump gets the advantage, because on the Ides of March, you have 66 delegates up in Ohio, winner take all at a statewide level. You have even more delegates up in Florida, but they're winner take all at the congressional district level. But if you have five candidates at that point, then the odds of Trump becoming the nominee are very high. If it's shrunk down to two or three and there's a consolidation of the non-Trump vote, then there's a good chance
that he
does not become the nominee.
That's very fascinating, very interesting. All right, so I understand over the Christmas holiday you apprehended two illegal aliens. Is that correct in Texas? Is that what happened?
Well, actually, they were apprehended by the Border Patrol. We simply discovered them in the middle of our hunting lease and called the Border Patrol in. Two guys hanging out underneath the trying to hide. One of them obviously in distress. Both of them dressed in black, which the Border Patrol guys tell you in South Texas is not a good sign. If they're dressed in black, it means these guys are pros, and one of them was in very bad shape. After our truck surrounded the Mott, he sort of came out and surrendered in return for some water and chocolate. But the other guy was pretty defiant. He snuck out of the back of the Mott, crawled out, we think, in order to hide something. And then when he realized he didn't have any options, he stood up, raised his hands, and started walking north, knowing that we wouldn't shoot him. And so a couple of us trailed him until the Border Patrol showed up and grabbed him. And I think they'd seen these actors before. and these Border Patrol guys got there as quick as they could, but they were very clear. They said, we need help. We don't have enough resources. We need more assistance, and the border is not safe.
Yeah, well, I believe that. Mr. Roth, thanks as always. We appreciate it. A quick footnote, Carl's book, The Triumph of William McKinley, is a must for anybody interested in American history.
All right. That was O'Reilly from the O'Reilly Factor with Carl Rove, The Triumph of William McKinley. I think those people actually know what they're talking about. They're amazing. There are so many people that speak about the politics, and I love them. I love Hannity. I love Newt Gingrich. I love O'Reilly. Of course, I love Trump and Ted Cruz. I think that there are good people for the future of the world. But let's listen to what the other side say. What the part of Sanders? Because that's the news. Because after the debate of Monday, it was really, really clear that that we have to have the debate result. I guess we have to consider him as a real contender for the presidential race. All right, so let's listen to what the other side of Democratic says about Bernie Sanders.
We here at MSNBC tonight have an embarrassment of riches. You just saw Governor O'Malley there live with my friend Chris Hayes. Vermont Senator and Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders is here tonight in my studio for the interview. Settle in. It's going to be a good night. But our conversation starts on March 24th, 1994. At the time, I was just about to turn 21. I had just moved to San Francisco. I was an AIDS activist. It was still a couple of years before protease inhibitors were around to treat HIV infection. And I remember that at the time, it just felt like the AIDS epidemic was roaring through the gay community, roaring through my community. And honestly, I didn't care all that much about electoral politics at the time. I cared about the activist issues that I was working on, which I saw as life and death issues. I cared about policy. I cared about, you know, local stuff and things directly related to the activist campaigns I was involved in. But for better or for worse, judge me for it if you will. I honestly, at the time, as a 20-year-old, did not much care about the presidency, nor did I care that much about the Congress. But even then, even with that mindset at the time, I remember when, in March 1994, a closeted member of Congress got outed as gay on the floor of the House of Representatives. In Congress, in a spit-flying, furious floor speech, this member of Congress, who I had otherwise never heard of, got outed, got forced out of the closet by a rabid right-wing Republican congressman named Bob Dornan.
Look, I was born in Manhattan, and I was raised in Beverly Hills from 10 to 19 when I went in the Air Force. And those two communities have a particular penchant for poisoning Little Dorothy's Kansas or Iowa or other parts of this country. Now, the last Republican, gentlemen, the last Republican for the state of New York or Manhattan?
Mr. Speaker, point of personal privilege. I ask the gentleman to withdraw his comment about my district poisoning on the rest of the country.
Ridiculous. Teach him parliamentary
procedure. The gentleman
procedure.
May not assert upon a personal privilege. The gentleman will resume.
Now, the last gentleman in the well, a Republican, I guess, quoting my wife again, has a revolving door on his closet. He's in, he's out, he's in, he's out, he's in. Now, I guess you're out because you went up and spoke to a huge homosexual dinner last week, Mr. Gunderson, or week before last, if I read the papers correctly. If I don't, correct me.
Mr. Chairman, I think this conversation is out of order and has no place.
3 years ago.
From Michigan, demands that the words be
taken down. Take them down, I'll wait. Sick of this.
The clerk will report the gentleman's words.
And because the gentleman's words were reported, the words were taken down, That means they were taken out of the congressional record. And so maybe that's why Congressman Bob Dornan was not censured for making that kind of a personal attack on another member of Congress from the floor of the House. You're not supposed to be able to do something like that as a member of Congress. But because his words were taken down, that was supposed to basically unring the bell, make it so he never said it. But he did. That March day in 1994, Bob Dornan really did out on the floor of the House of Representatives a Republican congressman named Steve Gunderson, who had never publicly revealed he was gay, but who had kind of tiptoed to the edge of coming out in front of some gay audiences. And Bob Dornan outed him as a way of selling his own anti-gay legislation to try to ban school districts from ever saying anything about the existence of gay people, particularly in relation to the issue of AIDS. And Steve Gunderson weathered it. He actually got reelected again from his Wisconsin district later that year. But those were nasty, nasty times. And 2 years after Bob Dornan outed Steve Gunderson on the floor of the House, Congressman Gunderson became the lone Republican on the very lonely side of a vote that still resonates right now in the race for the presidency this year. It was a vote on something called the Defense of Marriage Act in 1996. That bill banned federal recognition of marriages between same-sex couples. It passed the House by a huge margin, 342 votes in favor, only 67 votes opposed. Of the 67 votes opposed, 65 of them were Democrats. One of them was Republican Steve Gunderson. And one of them was an independent socialist, Vermont Congressman Bernie Sanders. That anti-gay bill passed by such huge margins in the House and in the Senate. The vote in the Senate was 85 to 14. It passed by such big margins that if President Clinton had vetoed that bill, his veto likely would have been overridden and pretty easily. The bill would have become law anyway, even if President Clinton had vetoed it. But President Clinton didn't veto it. He signed it. And before the House even passed it, weeks before they passed it, he said that he would sign it if they did pass it. And then after he signed it, he ran radio ads touting the fact that he had signed it in the last few weeks before President Clinton then went on to wallop Republican Bob Dole in the 1996 presidential election. And now, of course, it is a very different time. Former President Clinton said in 2013 that his own law, that DOMA law, should be overturned. And it was. It was overturned by the United States Supreme Court in one of the biggest gay rights legal victories of all time. Both former President Clinton and former Secretary of State Clinton have now said they are, of course, in favor of marriage equality. More than that, Secretary Clinton became a vocal champion of gay rights, both now as a presidential candidate and before that in her time as Secretary of State. She even promoted some landmark pro-gay rights legislation as a senator from the great state of New York. And now we're in a position where if you want to talk about a divide on this issue, it's between the parties. The parties could not be more different on this issue. All the Beltway happy talk about how gay rights is settled. We've supposedly had this great evolution in support of gay rights in this country. But consider just how deeply and uniformly anti-gay the Republican field is this year. I mean, even the supposedly newfangled Republicans all agree that it is totally kosher and ought to be totally legal for you to be fired for being gay or if your boss thinks you might be. And forget it on marriage. None of them support marriage rights. Meanwhile, on the other side of the partisan aisle, if you are a supporter of gay rights, you have an embarrassment of riches among the Democratic presidential frontrunners this year. You cannot find a whisper of difference between Senator Sanders and Secretary Clinton in terms of their commitment to equal rights now. But there was a difference back in the day, back in the bad old outing closeted congressman on the floor of the House days of the mid-1990s. And even for people who had no interest in electoral politics at the time, even like 20-year-old me, boy, did that send a shiver down my spine. And there is a difference now, I have to say, between presidential candidate Bernie Sanders and presidential candidate Hillary Clinton, even though there is no issue now, no difference now between them in terms of what policies they support now. There is a difference between them as candidates as to whether or not President Bill Clinton signing that anti-gay law, whether that was an anti-gay and lamentable mistake that never should have happened, or whether, as Secretary Clinton argued here on Friday night, it was actually a well-meaning effort to head off a greater harm that would have been done had President Bill Clinton not signed that discriminatory bill. But one of the things that I have been struck by during the Obama administration is that a lot of the, really the civil rights achievements of this administration have actually been undoing things that were done in the Clinton administration. Whether it was Don't Ask, Don't Tell, or the Defense of Marriage Act, or the, you know, tough on crime mandatory sentences. Former President Clinton is progressive on all those issues now, but the policies that he signed for politically practical reasons in the 90s have taken, you know, the political miracle of Barack Obama's election and a decade of progressive activism to unwind those things to get back to zero. Right. And so I know that you and President Clinton are different people, and I know that you're not responsible for what he did as president, but is your approach to civil rights issues the same as his, or is it different?
Well, I want to say a word about the issues you mentioned, because my take on it is slightly different. On defense of marriage, I think what my husband believed, and there was certainly evidence to support it, is that there was enough political momentum to amend the Constitution of the United States of America, and that there had to be some way to stop that. And there wasn't any rational argument, because I was in on some of those discussions on both Don't Ask, Don't Tell and on DOMA, where both the president, his advisors, and occasionally I would, you know, chime in and talk about, you can't be serious, you can't be serious. But they were. And so in a lot of ways, DOMA was a line that was drawn that was to prevent going further.
It was a defensive action.
It was a defensive action. The culture rapidly changed so that now what was totally anathema to political forces, they have ceded. They no longer are fighting except on a local level and a rear guard action. And with the U.S. Supreme Court decision, it's settled.
Most gay rights activists say that actually there wasn't an active threat of an anti-gay federal constitutional amendment at the time that President Clinton signed DOMA. In fact, the real push for that kind of an amendment did not really come until the George W. Bush administration. I mean, honestly, bottom line, fast forward to today, Hillary Clinton and former President Bill Clinton both support equal marriage rights with gusto. Neither one of them would support that anti-gay bill today, but they did back then. And Hillary Clinton's presidential primary opponent, Bernie Sanders, is going out of his way to make sure that history about this matter is told in the right way.
All right, we are back. It's Orly Benny Davis with Impossible Truth. We are talking about the differences between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. Right now he's leading over her, and probably we are to get used to a little left-wing ideas about how the future is going to look. But if I would be a serious journalist, I would ask him about the way he's going to resolve. The fact that he wants to dismantle Wall Street will not help to have less chaos, will not help us resolve the economic situation. The fact that he wants, listen to this, he does want to have a free education for everybody, which is wonderful. Now, he's going to make those in Wall Street pay, but if you're going to dismantle it, how are you going to pay for it? You understand? You cannot bite and eat the cake and leave it all. It's not working. Okay, so let's reason again. You want universal health care, which all the rest of the world has, he says. Okay, I was going to pay for it. Well, the rich will have to pay for it, but if you're going to take the money away from the rich, what is it? This is a redistribution of wealth. That's the idea. I know that my friends, my Bobby, you know, buddies, everybody can understand what he's saying, but I'm a little more particular about the fact that I need to have solutions. I don't like you to tell me what's the problem. I know there is a problem. I do want you to tell me how you're going to fix it. And right now, it's falling short for me, even that he's leading. With Hillary, I cannot even trust that she has the good ideas, because she helped create the mess we are all in. And I'm in the Middle East right now, and I trust me, you know, it's a part of the problem. So Bernie Sanders, nice guy, great guy, okay. And Donald Trump gets some credit because he got a lot of respect from world leaders. To get a respect of a Russian leader, it's not easy. To get respected from other world leader is not easy. And I don't see anybody who's more exciting as far as the candidate from the GOP race. Now think, he's already getting claimed. You know, people are really, really exciting about Donald Trump in the Middle East. They feel that America will be America again. This is all American guy, if you like it or not. It's nothing to do with my liking him or not. It's a fact that he represents all American boy that the world like to see. He's big, he's smart, he's funny, he's good-hearted, he's strong, he's forthcoming. This is America, you know, and you want to have a leader that works with the rest of the world on the terms they understand, and they do understand him. All right, so let's get more songs with Italian music that I prepared for you, and then we'll be back after that.
Ti porto a cena con me. Il tuo passato non è invitato, lascia a casa le pene, se me lo sono un po' meritato. Ti porto a cena perché vorrei che tu mi togliessi il fiato.
Ti porto a cena con me with Giuse Ferrari. I'm gonna take you to dinner with me. That's, you know, the exact translation. So I'm gonna take you to dinner. That's Giuse Ferrari. She sings in Italian. It's new songs that I'll try to introduce to you. Well, I'll introduce to you coming days. Now, let's talk about some birthday messages that we want to send. First of all, and the most important, this week, Daniel Roy Benny is going to celebrate his 24th birthday. So, actually, it's going to be 25th. My goodness gracious, that time flies. It's 2016, I guess. 25th, wow. Daniel Benny, happy birthday, my sweetheart. I love you. God bless you. And then we have a birthday to David. Happy birthday. Be well, David. You need to get in shape. And the most gracious company that we have for the birthday week too is for Nikki Haley. She is from the governor of South Carolina. She has a birthday this week. So happy birthday, Nikki. God bless you. What a trooper you are. We love you. Keep it up. All right. So let's keep on going. We have a really important endorsement to let you listen to, and then we'll think, what are we going to do with that? All right, let's listen.
And we begin with the bombshell endorsement on the campaign trail. No matter where you stand on Sarah Palin, she is a force among conservative voters. And tonight, as you can see, she's on that stage a short time ago declaring she is, quote, proud to endorse Donald J. Trump, throwing her conservative credentials and star power behind the Republican frontrunner. It comes less than 2 weeks before the crucial state of Iowa. And what now for Ted Cruz, who once said of Sarah Palin, she picks winners? ABC's Tom Yamas is at the event in Iowa, and he leads us off live tonight. Tom, good evening.
David, good evening. Just behind me, Sarah Palin has taken the stage, speaking right next to Donald Trump. So much excitement surrounding this announcement. The candidate who has surprised us throughout the campaign surprises us yet again.
I would like to bring up, if I might, Governor Sarah Palin.
Tonight, Sarah Palin is back.
Are you ready to make America great again?
Shaking up the Republican race with just 13 days to go before the Iowa caucuses.
And are you ready to stump for Trump? You ready for a commander-in-chief who will let our warriors do their job and go kick ISIS? Yeah! Not a politician. Can I get a hallelujah? Doggone right we're angry, justifiably so.
The two former reality show stars have been close for years. Palin sitting down for New York pizza with Trump in 2011 as she pondered her own run for the White House.
How about a Trump-Palin ticket?
That sounds exciting.
Trump recently appearing on Palin's talk show where she sang his praises.
And this is a movement, the Trumpeters, Trumpservatives, these are what these folks are called. Everything about Donald Trump's campaign, it's avant-garde, and he is crushing it in the polls.
Her endorsement now coming at a pivotal point for Trump as Senator Ted Cruz and others attack his, quote, New York values.
Mr. Trump, both Rush Limbaugh and Senator Ted Cruz.
All right. Now, I'm going to hold my comment after the next piece of news that I wanted you to follow up on the first one.
So Donald Trump says he's got a big endorsement coming his way in Iowa. Big event planned, big rally. Someone's going to appear on that stage with him. Honestly, we don't know who it is. There's been some speculation it's Jerry Falwell Jr. Other speculation it's Sarah Palin, who was very supportive, by the way, of Ted Cruz in his first Senate run. What if it is Sarah Palin? Would that be a blow to the Cruz campaign?
I think it'd be a blow to Sarah Palin because Sarah Palin has been a champion for the conservative cause. And if she was going to endorse Donald Trump, sadly, she would be endorsing someone who's held progressive views all their life on the sanctity of life, on marriage, on partial birth abortion. He was a supported TARP bailout. I mean, it goes on and on and on. Donald Trump claims he's changed all those views, but I think if it was Sarah Palin, let me just say I'd be deeply disappointed.
All right. Well, he's disappointed, but I am disappointed with all the hoo-ha that we have on this, because the way that she endorses him, trust me, many in the South are not so happy about this performance, okay? And the using the A-word was out of line, and Mrs. Sarah Palin, so sorry, but I don't think you add up to the thing, to the game. Maybe, you know, many supporters, of course, she was the candidate to be a VP of the U.S., which is incredible task and incredible place to be put on the world stage, of course. Not a question. Respect that very much. I respect her position. I respect that Donald Trump did not gain from her endorsement. Whatever you might want to see it or not, he did not. Anyway. Let's listen to something important that our friend, our dear, dear, incredible friend, Robert Redford, is talking about saving our last wild places. A message from NRDC, they are talking about, President Obama took a big step in the right direction last week by imposing moratorium on the new coal mining on our public lands, and that bold move will protect our climate and millions of acres of wild lands from revenge of coal mining. But the moratorium does not apply to oil and gas development, and a surge of fracking continues to threaten our most cherished wildlands. Places like Utah, New Mexico, Cheka Canyon National Historic Park, and so many others. So he calls now to you guys to understand that we need to pay attention to what's going on. And I wish that we can help and help those people that work against the environment fix it or stop damaging the environment, because right now it's all so fragile, so who knows what's going on and how it's going to be. Now, I know that we have a few more minutes, and I'm going to send you off with Italian song for tonight, but I want to pray with you. I really want to pray for the world, because if we are holding, you know, a big crash right now, we might have the miracle to stop it, and we start igniting the economy worldwide. We start working together as one. And maybe somebody can talk to those people, the crazy ideas of ISIS, and ask them what the heck they want. Because I don't know if anybody asked them. They talk, they want to kill, they want to go, and they want to run. And we don't know why they are doing all of this. We get the Iranian to start playing with the world economy again. Okay, they're going to be in check a little, but maybe they'll come to play and be the right wing. The Saudis are playing right, and they want to, you know, maybe they control their schooling and the way they teach anti-religious activism. I don't know. I'm saying anti, I'm saying accept the Muslim, because when you become race, you know, religious fanatic, you become also a wild card in the midst. So today, Wednesday, January 20th, I know it's a big day. It's an important day for the world. May it be, you know, remember as a good day. It's a good day when people start taking it and bring the world to a better day. From Israel. God bless you all. Love you. Holy Land, I hope that your many blessings goes your way, wherever you are. Just be cool. Keep it up. God bless you all. Ciao, ciao.